Hello and welcome to another episode of the Edge of Futurist podcast. How are you doing, Ben?
I'm very, very well, thank you. It's not too great. It's not too warm, though. I don't know what 6 degrees it says on my watch. I don't know if that's 6 degrees of separation. We could have done something about 6 degrees of separation if I'd have planned that beforehand. But yeah, it's been a bit chilly. But yeah, other than that, I can't really complain. You good, mate?
Shorts and t-shirts weather. It's above 5 degrees, so yeah. I've been out in some sliders today.
We're northern, aren't we? We're northern.
We are. Yeah. So no, things are good. And you know what? I'm going to give it a game away time we're recording this one. But you know what's really nice? The window here, I can see daylight still.
Yeah, for sure. You can see it in my background here. Actually, yeah.
It's creeping in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. It is nice. So, Steve, I'm going to ask you a question. Rather than just doing a bit of an update of what we've been doing, I'm going to I'm a big fan of cards and reflection. You know this, right? So,
has anybody seen my LinkedIn post about Ben's cards? By the way, Ben's your man for cards.
Thanks, Steve. Very kind of you to say that. I'm not
playing
using
cards.
One of my. I'm
not Joker.
It's not one. They're not them nudie playing cards as well. So just so you know, we're not talking about them. I'm not.
We're gonna have to put an E on the episode now.
No, I didn't swear. I just mentioned nudie cards. Anyway, these are from Stephen Bartlett's conversation cards. I think they're absolutely brilliant. They're provoking good conversation. But this is my question for you, and it was actually a question that was asked by Payal Kadakia on Bartlett's podcast, and this is what the question was. When was the last time a day flew by and what were you doing? When was the last time a day flew by and what were you doing?
The days are a blur, I'll be honest. my life is a blur. Positive, but I get through and I just go, I think, you know, I was having a conversation. I think everybody in the UK, maybe the world feels like this. January lasts 16 months long. February lasts 3 minutes, and all of a sudden we're in March tomorrow. But I've got, I am lucky enough to be leading a company. I'm lucky enough to spend an awful amount of time with you, Ben, and doing the podcast around that. And obviously, probably the most special part of my week is the kids. And when you have two young children, Ella is 4 in July, and Ollie's 2. Their time seems to be going so quickly. And my week seemed to be going so quickly. We spend awful amount of time. Ella has dance. Ollie has football. The rest of the time is either out on a field in warmer weather and days that aren't freezing cold, or in soft play. So those days just go really, really by. And then add in, obviously, the running at the minute, trying to get that back up and going. If I'm honest, every day seems to fly. So I would say every day. But positively flying by, I just have to remember those moments where, you know what, just relax, just take it in, just breathe it and enjoy it. Because for as crazy as sometimes are, and I think it was my dad that said this, and he just said, remember, as challenging as your children are at times, you only get 18 summers with them before they become adults. So try and remember and try and treasure those moments. So I'm trying to be present in all of those bits. And it's a challenge. How about you? Spin it back to you, Ben.
I love that. Mine's going to be similar, to be fair. We had a Sunday the other week. My wife, for those of you who don't know, my wife is a sergeant in child protection. So she has to work a number of weekends and ends up working late and all the stuff that goes with it. We had a weekend where we didn't have a swimming gala on, which is a rarity nowadays, and that Amanda wasn't working as well. So we had a really lovely Sunday where we'd spent the whole day together as a family. The phones weren't out. We'd gone out to meet with friends early on, and then we went to the cinema to watch Mean Girls, the musical Mean Girls, the new one. So my daughters absolutely loved that. And then we had a... We went out for a meal at our local Italian restaurant that the kids love, but it felt like the full day had gone in a series of seconds. But it also felt like they were moments that were to be cherished, just like you were saying, those moments to be cherished. And this is quite deep for us going into a conversation. And I think it's important that actually the reason why we do what we do, whether that's business-wise, whether that's podcasts, whether that's content that we create, we want to leave something. Somebody once said, didn't they, about planting trees under whose shade you're not going to sit. And I think that's what you do with your kids as well. It's about doing things that are going to have a legacy and an impact. And it kind of ties into, from an education perspective as well, that we don't always know the impact of what we're going to do. But certainly there is an impact. And when you get little, you'll get these, Steve, when you get somebody who just says to you, you get a little email, or you see them in the gym, or you see them out in the pub or something, and they go, do you know what, you took a bit of a chance on me, or I remember your classes. And you don't always remember those things, and those times fly by. I worked in the same school for 11-12 years, and your kid, like you said, your kid's growing up. My eldest daughter's 13, nearly 14, and you think, where the bloody hell's that gone? But ultimately those things fly by, and you can just go back and cherish those memories, can't we? Look at that. This is really deep. Six and a half minutes deep. Guys, I feel like we need to just, Steve, I feel like we need to just get back into the...
Don't worry, guest that's waiting in the wings. We're not going to ask you the same question. let's bring our guest in. Like I say, this one's been in the offing and they're planning for a long time now, but we're excited to have our guest on, Matt from Canva. Doesn't have an Australian accent, but doesn't have a Yorkshire accent either. But he's a Northerner. There's a theme going on. Matt, tell us a bit about yourself, and great to have you join us, mate.
Yeah, likewise. It's really good to be on the show finally. I'm actually from Newcastle, so Northern, but I do live in Leeds. So still representing the Yorkshire side. So I'm at Canva. I've been at Canva for not very long now. I joined in the middle of December. So still pretty new into it. My background has been education sales. I've did psychology when I was at university. And then off the back of that, I kind of was wanting to do organizational psychology. So always wanted to get into an area where I can see all kind of realms of the business so I can figure out what it is that I wanted to go into. And sales seemed like the easiest way to do that. And as with a lot of people in sales, I think, jumped into it, enjoyed it, stayed in it, and grew to love the kind of the aspect of sales. But over the last 10 years, it's always been education sales. And that's very much been my remit and my passion. I'm a governor now as well. So it's, not an educationalist like you guys, but very much kind of feel like the stuff that I can bring from the work side and the kind of preparing learners for work.
Yeah, and I think that's really, really interesting. What you say there, it's great to hear that you've stepped into a role of in governorship, and that's demanding. Ben's chair of governors. I've been a chair of governors, and the VAT voluntary sector and the supporting sector of schools is something that's really, I won't say undervalued, but there's a lot of pressure and a lot of effort that goes into that role. You said that you've been in education sales. I think before I joined and did the work that I did now, sales is maybe seen as this bad word and an unreceptive word in many sectors. And education is one where, they're selling something to us. But ultimately, I think it's just a title. And obviously, Matt, I've not known you that long, but we've connected quite a bit. And ultimately, what I really, really like about yourself, but also about Canva, is the work that they're doing, but also why they're doing it. And we're going to touch upon that. For those people who haven't used Canva before, Edgy Futurist, all of the stuff that you see, all of our artwork, the things for those people who have been attending the Uprising, we've been big Canva users. I've been self-taught and I've learned a lot from Ben. And I know Dan was a big advocate when he was part of the podcast as well. We've been using it for such a long period of time for our slides, for our presentations, for our artwork, and lots of different things. But Canva is one of those unicorn companies where it started by, I'm not even going to try and remember the individual's name, but was started in Australia and is one of and a unicorn as a company, is one that becomes £1 billion as a startup owned by, that's not floating, that is still privately owned. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So from that one startup idea to now having teams sitting in different countries and having sales teams. And if you were at Bet Anybody in the UK, the massive stand that Canva had. Tell us a bit about the journey of Canva from what you see it as and what you know about it then, Matt.
Yes. So it's been a wild ride for Canva. So we had our 10th birthday last year, so still fairly new. It was created by Mel Perkins and Cliff. And it was actually what a lot of people don't realize. It was born out of education. So Cliff is an educationalist, and Mel at the time was teaching people on design. And as you may know, with a lot of these kind of professional design tools, it was a situation where it was a lot to kind of train people on. A lot of people spend kind of 10 years learning how to use these tools. And when you are using them, you would go over here to grab your fonts, over there to get your images. You would then be going all over the place to get different functionalities to build a design. And Mel and Cliff's idea was, let's try and democratize this design and make it accessible for everybody. So that's where Canva was born out of. And it's a really interesting journey because we now, within just education, have 60 million teachers and students using the platform every single month. The company's up over 4,000 employees now, so it has grown huge over the last 10 years.
So 10 years from two founders who had just had a bit of an idea about democratizing design, which is super... We can get into democratizing design in a minute. We'll come to that. But from two people 10 years ago to 4,000 people now, 60 million users in education, plus millions and millions and tens of millions of people all around the world that are using it, outside of that, in that corporate space and in the individual space. Because obviously, one thing that we will link to in the show notes is the fact that Canva is free in terms as a tool for everybody, but the premium version, pro version, is free for education. One of the big things that I know that has been the mission of the owners has always been that it will always remain free for education, and it will always be, we'll give you all these, because we realize the value of education. So we will come into all them things as well. But I think that's just a brilliant story that started with two people that were in education to an extent, and then have created a tool that's become beyond education, but still has a priority of education. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, 100%. And the whole ethos of Canva, and largely the reason that I joined, is they want to become one of the most valuable companies in the world. But the reason for wanting to do that is so that they can do the most good they possibly can. And that's really the fundamental values that it's easy to see it on the surface, and it can be a kind of a brand thing, but actually being on the inside, it's incredible to see the way that they live that. And making the platform free for education is one part of that. But it's also free for not-for-profits. So we have over half a billion not-for-profits that use the platform to support the work that they do, and it's free for up to 50 users. We do a lot around for universities. It's paid for the lecturers, but it's free for all of the students still. And there's so much that the organization does. I was over in Sydney last week as part of a kind of a kickoff that we were doing. And on the Friday, we did food packing for the homeless to give out. And I was like, oh, that's a nice kind of activity to do amongst the other activities. And it turns out that's something that the office does every single week. Every single Friday, as part of their Force for Good, they do lots of community events and things like that. And it's, the list goes on and on and on of all the different stuff that they do. But they really are living that idea of creating a company so that they can be a force for good. So it's an amazing thing to be a part of.
Yeah, and I think that's, when you speak to the younger generation, or I say younger generation, makes me sound like I'm old. And I'm these kids nowadays, I think,
you are
even
old,
my generation, yeah. But even my generation, as a 40-year-old man, I am
40?
Considerate. Yeah, I know. I don't look a day over 60, do I, mate? But but like I have a massive, and Ben, I know you share the passion for Patagonia, but I always liked the brand Patagonia. But actually, I've taken time to understand what the brand is, and their previous CEO and founder for anybody who doesn't know the story, basically created a trust. His family didn't really need and want for anything. Though, let's be honest, you know, when you're worth that much money as a family, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's not as if he's putting his family on a breadline. But said, you know what? I'm going to take this trust, and every bit of profit now is going to go in terms of trying to provide and think about, you know, climate change and everything else. That's a decision for me. I think about, you know, clothing. I think about, you know, where I buy. I was looking at holidays. Who do I buy from? Because ultimately, some of those holiday companies, I don't believe in what they're trying to do. And I think a lot of organisations and younger people and the generation that's coming through is now considering not what they buy, but the organisations that they buy from, because they have a choice. And they look at it and go, okay, that's fine. We understand that, yes, you're going to make a profit because you're a business, but also what are you doing about that? Because profit's great, but what else are you doing alongside the profit? And I think Canva's one of those, like you've just shared some stories, where ultimately they don't do greenwashing. They don't do this other stuff. What they're doing is actually saying they're going to do something, and they're standing by it. And that's something that's really, really key. Yeah. As well. So obviously that's what you're doing in education, and you're stepping into that. What does that look like? And for those founders and the journey and the work that you're doing, generally Canva is a creativity tool. So I suppose in education, is it starting to think about how Canva can be used, not just being given it away for free, but the use cases in education to then think, right, how can this tool be used beyond just a creative organization or design tech or something else? Is it trying to push through a messaging of trying to be creative in all subjects and topics in education then?
Yeah, and that's one of the big conversations that I tend to have on a day-to-day basis. When we speak to people about Canva, maybe their marketing and the communications team at the Trust know it and want to use it and really, really like it. And then you speak a bit more and they say, oh, our art department would quite like that, or the graphic design for the sixth formers would be great for that. But actually, as part of this kind of democratizing design, it's about enabling people to communicate in a way that is going to resonate more. So anyone that's got information to share or a story to tell, they're the people that Canva can really, really help. And for me, educators are probably the number one people who do that. Every day they're standing up in front of a class and they're trying to share information and trying to engage their audience. And that's where utilizing Canva as part of that engagement is a massive, massive benefit.
And could you try and push through that in terms of, not to put you on the spot or anything else, but some of those examples of where stories have come back to you in education where you're thinking that'd be really, really good and that needs to be shared as a case study beyond kind of demystifying, I suppose, and breaking down those barriers, because people only know what they know. And if they've given examples to them, how can they potentially utilize it and think of, right, I can apply that to the context of my organization, might be from university, but can apply it to a school and primary level and everything else.
Yeah, of course. So I think that the simple way to kind of start off is probably for people that don't know to explain what sort of components are within Canva. So within there, there's the ability to create presentations, there's the ability to do whiteboards, create videos, there's documents and things like that. And there's loads of templates and loads of educational resources. So we see a lot of schools, for example, give their learners a task to present some information that they've learned. And they can go away and they can deliver that in a way that is actually meaningful for them. So one of the things that I often hear quite a lot from a student point of view is that they had the opportunity to reflect their knowledge in a way that actually shows their own personality and their own character. So we see that, for example, with being able to do something via an infographic. But actually another student, that might not resonate as well. They want to do it as a video. They really love TikTok. They really love YouTube, and they're able to design their own video and explain their learning in a way that suits them. So one of the kind of key benefits, I think, when it comes to utilizing it in the classroom is it gives people that ability to showcase and evidence their learning in a way that inspires and works for them.
And that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so it's not just about building blocks. It's not just about great features and can you do this? And obviously, we are big fans, right? So we know we use video, we use it for video editing, we use it for design, we use it as in design of booklets, and our trends booklet that went out last summer was designed in Canva. All of our cards for our YouTube videos, all designed in Canva. Majority of our social media posts designed in Canva. My book that we were talking about, Intermezzo, earlier, laid up, designed in Canva. So, like, there's also, but the principle around it is this idea of making it simple, right? So we talked about that democratization stuff earlier of design, but not everybody wants things to look beautiful, but not everybody's got the skill to do that. Or, and this is the bit that where it ties to that force for good stuff, is that can afford the expensive tools and the processing power to be able to run some of these. And we won't name any because obviously we're not in that game. But ultimately, some of them tools are super expensive, right? And Canva are trying to make it so that it's accessible and available. So everybody deserves to have beautiful design. Everybody deserves to have content that looks great. That's what we can do, right, in Canva.
Yeah, and it's not just the tool that's free of charge. We have a whole services wraparound. We have training that we provide to schools and to trusts as well. So there's a lot that comes to it. But actually, we tend to find that not that many people need the training. Once you get into it, there's always little extra tips and tricks that you can benefit from training for. But in reality, we tend to see that one teacher or one person within the school will have created something. It'll wow the other people. They'll want to know, how did you do it? Is it possible? And as soon as you pick it up, you can get going from day one. You guys probably know the first time that you picked it up, and it was certainly the same for me. I used Canva long before I worked here. And I used it every day for proposals. I used it for presentations, for all sorts of things. I actually even did my wedding design on it. And I'm by no means a designer. But the templates that are in there make it really straightforward. The assets that are already there at your fingertips make it so easy and quick to be able to create things that will engage people. So we all want to be able to use these incredible new tools, but we know how strapped for time teachers are. So learning something new isn't always a possibility, which is why I think there's been such an organic growth with Canva. And we see a huge amount of adoption within schools, just organically from people finding it, realizing they can create things very, very quickly without much training needed.
Yeah, and that's definitely true. Sorry, Steve. I think it's definitely true that it is. You can learn it on the go. And the design studio and the design school, of the training that sits in there, of being able to learn some stuff. And it's intuitive, right? So I'd never done any video editing in there, but I've done video editing before. I've played with other things. You put something in there. Well, the little clip things are here, and this is where you'd put your brand, and this is how you add your audio. It's intuitive, and I think that's what makes it a tool that a lot of people find invaluable. Sorry, Steve, you were gonna say.
No, I was just gonna say I think the ease of use, I think the support, and obviously the things that are in there, the massive wave of transformation and the amount of people using it and sharing their stories on it. But I think the biggest thing and step forward outside of the ease of use is cloud-based product for design that works on anything, because ultimately, regardless of what device you're on, you've got access to it. And I think I remember, and I liken it to when I first stepped into the Google ecosystem world of when I was using it, because yes, now I work for a company that is reselling it and everything else. But ultimately in 2012, started using it. 2013 got first Chromebook, and ultimately the product then, as it was all individual apps, it didn't matter whether I had a Chromebook at that time, because ultimately if I had it on a Windows machine or a laptop or a Mac or anything else, it worked exactly the same because it's a cloud-based product. You didn't have to download anything. It didn't say you can do this, but if you want to do it better, you have to then download this functionality of it. That's the bit that really strikes home in terms of the power of use, because ultimately it just cascades across anybody's use case then, really.
Yeah, it really is. And for the and it's credit to the product team and the vision of the leadership within the company, that the whole purpose of, if you're going to empower the world to design, you need to have it accessible on every single device. It needs to work on the worst little Android phone, because that's perhaps all that people can afford. And if it's going to be a global company, it needs to work in every single language. So there's been a lot of time and a lot of effort spent making sure that the platform works in the most straightforward way on any device, no matter what technology you've got, so that it can open up doors for people no matter where they are.
Yes. Yes. I always find it really difficult to find the unmute button. I don't know why. Maybe that's just I'm special. Maybe I just anyway. So Canva as a company, we believe in the product. We believe in the tools that sit up there. We know that it's helping make a difference in a school setting and broadly into businesses and universities and all the other space that goes with it. And tied into all that kind of mission driven stuff, broadly, this idea of creativity then. So we know that one of our heroes, who we never got a chance to meet, but most people in education have this person as a hero, who has inspired us. We've all watched his TED Talk, probably read his books. So Ken Robinson talked about how, asked the question, do schools kill creativity? And the majority of us answer in the yes, they do. We're not slagging schools off. We're not slagging teachers off. But the reality is creativity a normal part of what we do in education? For most of us, the answer is no. I know there are some people that might be listening to this, and certainly some connections I have on some of the socials that argue with me, that argue that that's a trope, and it's like, there's a lot of people that are banging on about it and it's not true. Sorry, I still disagree with you. You haven't convinced me otherwise. Creativity is essential to what you do as Canva. There's no getting around that. So what do you think makes creativity an important skill beyond just being able to make things look beautiful? It's that creative element. Why do you think creativity as a skill is really important?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question. I think the world, as we know, has changed and is changing and is going to continue to change. And I think schools are maybe, and through no fault of teachers, but schools are very much kind of left behind in terms of what they're training and what they're preparing people for. Because that knowledge retention and that learning and being able to resurface knowledge isn't necessarily as important as it once was, when I can go straight online and I can Google it, or even now I don't even need to bother Googling it because I've got AI that'll just tell me it straight away. And I think as we move more into that kind of era, things like creativity, things like communication and storytelling, those more kind of softer skills are going to be what's a lot more important. And as I say, I'm not able to come at it from an educated point of view, but certainly from a workplace point of view, when I'm hiring staff, it's those kind of skills that I'm particularly interested in, because they're the sort of skills that it's a lot harder to teach. Once they're in, it's harder to kind of change if they don't already have them skills. So things like creativity, but also, like I say, resilience, communication, things like that are what I certainly look for from people. Because it's, like I said, the information is out there. They can go and find information on whatever they need. So that retention isn't so much important, but being able to think on your feet, being able to come up with innovative ideas is what our business really cares for. And it's what all businesses around the world care for. So I think preparing students with that skill, and it's one that once you kind of open up that door to creativity and you give people the environment in which they can be creative, then everyone, I believe, does have it and can unlock it. It's just really, really hard to do if you've not been put into that mindset at a young age and you've not been given that opportunity at a young age to harness that skill.
Yeah, and definitely. And I think when we came on the call before, we were discussing some things before we went live. So people have probably seen it on social media. If you're not, go check it out. You guys have been involved in Empathy Week this week. Another thing where, and we had Ed on, And we were talking about empathy, but also some research linking into how empathy also leads to creativity. And actually, it can, as a skill that both can be developed and the importance of that. Talk to us about the role that Canva have been playing in Empathy Week this week and everything else, I guess, if that's something you can talk about.
Yeah, so we've been supporting Ed and the team at Empathy Week with what they've been doing in this session, but also going forward, it's something that personally I have a lot of time for. What the messaging that they give out is incredible, and it's something that it's quite a simple message, but a lot of people don't take that time to sit and focus on it, and the impact that it can have is huge. You mentioned that research there. So that study that they're doing in partnership, I believe, with NHS and with Cambridge University, where they looked at, by building empathy, what impact does that have on creativity? And they did it for a campaign for inhalers to get children to use their inhalers more. And they found that just an hour of kind of work on empathy prior to that massively unlocked creativity in students, to the point where the designs that they created within that were actually used in the NHS campaign in the end. And it's incredible. And it's also incredible from a sales point of view. Empathy is massively useful in terms of being able to put yourself in other people's shoes and understand what's going on. And we see that within education as well, when it comes to not just creativity, but behavior and that as well. Being able to have that understanding and appreciation for other people, I think, is a massive, massive thing that it's quite easy to just take an hour and focus on. So one of the things as well that we did as part of the session yesterday that I thought was incredible was they put a poll up and they said, what's the most important thing going on in your life right now? And the things that come up were so almost shocking to see everything that people are dealing with. You think there's a lot going on in your life and the things that other people are dealing with, and it just automatically changed the whole atmosphere in the room and enabled people to just communicate and connect on such a different level.
That stuff matters as well, doesn't it? It's beyond that level of connection, and you believe in that space, right? So you believe in education being more than grades, being more than prescribed curriculum, being about the things that genuinely matter. And we are, as Steve said earlier, we're massive proponents of the work that Ed and the team are doing there because of this unrelenting drive and purpose to do things that really matter. And it's hard sometimes in education to be in a space where you feel like you want to make a difference, but can you really make a difference? And it's the stuff like that that does make a difference. And yeah, you can certainly see why companies get behind it, but also why so many people are willing to volunteer and throw their time into that space as well. We're looking forward in the next few weeks to interviewing some of the people that have been involved in that space as well, from an education perspective, and what we can learn from an education piece to kind of continue that conversation around empathy. Yeah. And that matters, right? That matters beyond the four walls of a classroom and a curriculum and a set of rules, set of tasks to do. And
it's so difficult, I think, for teachers in the situation that they're in to balance everything, because I'm sure a lot of them would love to spend all day building these rounded individuals that are prepared for the world that they're going out for. But at the same time, there's exam grades that need to be focused on, there's Ofsted reports that need to be focused on, and it's difficult when that doesn't always marry up with actually preparing someone for the future.
Yeah, we've talked about it for such a long period of time, and what's really interesting, you said you can't talk it from an educationalist point of view, but you've been in industry, you're recruiting into industry, you're leading an industry, and me and Ben have crossed over into the other side where we're recruiting. And I was thinking, I keep saying to people, they were going, oh, I'll share my CV and everything else. I was like, that's fine, but just remove your qualifications, generally, depending on the call. And they were like, really? I was like, yeah. just don't worry about it. Just get it to a page or anything else. And I was like, don't recreate it for me. But I was like, just give me your experiences and some other bits and everything else. That's absolutely fine. Because you can have a 9 in maths, and you can have a 9 in English and all these other things, but it doesn't really testament to actually the carryover of the employability skills and actually your role in industry. You can have the brain the size of a planet in terms of the qualifications, but ultimately if you can't transform that and you can't put that into context and you can't apply that and communicate it, it's great having it in your head, but if you can't communicate that across to different people in different audiences, you're going to struggle in many different things. And I think we've been infatuated in England with exams being the be all and end all and the end, but we need to really start to think about that structure. We had Will Goldsmith on from Beedale School that are not scrapping GCSEs as we talked about on a regular basis, but we're saying that actually decreasing those in number and creating their own qualifications that are recognised by UCAS, that do feed in all of these skills and better projects and things like that, that do have some exams and some different metrics in there as well, but not just it being everything is measured by that one point endpoint assessment for those weeks at the end of your when you become 15, 16, and that's how we're going to judge you, judging it in a whole more holistic way. And I think that's what Canberra is, and it's only going to grow.
Yeah.
If you're saying 10 years, you know, imagine what the world of work is going to look like as these educators that have been using it for free. I love the, let's be honest, it's fantastic, but I don't want to speak ill of it. But also, what will that look like in terms of transcending into business as well, that you will have a real route to cloud workers and skilled people using, focus on skills, but also products that can be used anywhere as well.
Exactly. And I think the risk that you can run is that you can kill the confidence of people who are perfect for the workforce just because they're not getting those 9s or those 8s, or they're not suited necessarily to getting the grades in academia. They feel that they're not good enough, where actually, actual fact, the soft skills that they have make them perfect for the workforce.
What's matter, Ben?
No, I think absolutely nothing. I think that I'm absolutely agreeing. I think the soft skills, the power skills, whatever you want to call them, that really matter beyond the hard skills. Can you code? Can you write? Can you spell? Like, they're important, right? But are they the only things that matter? And interestingly, we've had a number of people over the last 2 or 3 years who obviously were talking around the role of AI in education and the role of it. I've got two books on my desk here of people that are going to be coming on the podcast soon. One's about AI in the primary classroom. One's about AI in the future of education. We've got a guy who used to be on our podcast with us, but now is the AI educator. Like, so we know that it's making that difference. So the thing that is making a massive impact and disruption in education. So the question really is that we're getting to is those power skills, those soft skills, the things that are going to make humans stand out, so to speak, like what and survive. That's surely got to be the focus of us as educators when AI can do a lot of the hard stuff.
Yeah, and just to turn it back to you guys, and is there a reason that you think that it's not more of a focus for the DfE or for these exam boards?
Yeah. Do you see how quickly it was? How quickly we both unmuted then? I think for me, it's absolutely a political decision. It's a decision to it won't take very many people to work out where I stand and sit politically, because ultimately, if we keep the system the way it is, where we just perpetuate that kind of factory model where people are compliant and learning that way, and then we'll go into workplace, then eventually what will happen is we can just maintain that status quo and we can keep things and we can keep the statuses in society and the spectrum in society the way it is. And I think the reason why we don't have an opportunity to develop things beyond just maths, English, science, and everything else is like, yeah, you don't really care about performing arts. RE, do we really need to care about what other people believe and think? Empathy, creativity, curiosity stuff. Do we really? Well, no, what we need to do is we need to babysit these children for 16 years or however many years it is, whilst their parents are working and putting money into the economy, and therefore these, when they grow up, they're just going to be compliant people who follow rules and do as they're told. And that's not me like being anti-authoritarian and being like, oh, I believe in communism. I'm not saying that either. I think that's the reason why it is the way it is. Steve, would you agree?
I think it needs to be, the reason why it's not changed is because nobody will tackle it for the longevity beyond a four-year term. And I think the challenge in this country is education, health, and many, many different things are used as political beasts. I actually had this conversation with somebody who is involved in the DfE, who I won't mention, but it was an event, and they said, what do you want? It was positive. It's really, and they had a really great conversation actually around it. I think they're looking after FE, so post 16, anything beyond K-12. And they said, what would you want us to feedback based on? It was an AI conversation, but what would you want to feedback? And I said, what I want to feedback is, let's remove education from being a political beast where they only get 4 years potentially to tackle it. They're trying to unpick something else and then trying to resolve it without, and you've got people coming in there and one person that's leading it, that's only experience of education generally is their time in education, that, let's be honest, for majority of people that are in political parties, if it's not the experience that I've been through in a state school, there's not many. It's a very different experience. That's fine. That's their experience. But you're trying to judge everybody's experience in England, let's say, based on that, and it can't be. It's cross-sector, and I think it needs to be removed out of the political positioning, and it needs to be cross-party, long-term plan, long-term vision, so we can say, well, ultimately, what do we want to aspire? You've then got many, many different people feeding into it, and it becomes a longevity in terms of what do we want the future of education to be, rather than the future of education to be, this is what we're going to do, so we're going to change it. And if we get another opportunity after 4 years, we'll change it again or we'll do some more. It needs to be taken out and needs to be longer than that. We're also basing it on a model of the mass market. I was probably seen as, I wouldn't say I was a failure in school, but I was bang average if you look at my GCSEs. I got 11 Cs. What bang average is that? You can't get any more bang average. And I would be, but my thing would be, I don't believe I'm average. I won't say I'm exceptional, but some people are told they're a failure. Some people are told they're average by a measure that really is judging everybody in exactly the same way. And I think it's just unfair, is my belief. I don't think it's, you're trying to treat everybody and judge everybody in the same way. We won't get into the complexities of fairness of in terms of GCSEs and all that, but the end point assessment, we've really lost sight of what education and learning is, and it isn't demonstrating in an exam at the age of 16. And the only other thing is, one of the reasons why we don't change it is it's not necessarily skills and not something tangible that you can demonstrate. Every year you will see lots of things that we can talk about, stats on this is the amount of A's that we've got, it's increasing, and this is the amount of people that have got, sorry, I'm saying A's, nines, and look at the grade increases and everything else. We've become obsessed with it. Oh, it's gone up too much this year. They must be getting easier, these exams. What happens if everybody's got smarter? And all of these different things. But it's like laying down the tracks of a train. We're not trying to... What we really need to focus on is the experience of the train, but that's much more difficult to judge and demonstrate back and show the improvement of it rather than how many meters of track you've laid. And I think we're obsessed with demonstrating how many certificates have been held up and the number on them now rather than letter. That's probably why one of the biggest changes that we'll make. I talked a lot then, didn't I? And I don't think I really said a lot, but
you did.
I'm trying to get to the point of, yeah, so there's lots of things to share, but that's probably it. Needs to be taken out of the political ecosystem and cross-party, and ultimately we need to think about how we could, if they want to measure it beyond a certificate. So what are people saying, and how are we doing it? How are we demonstrating those skills? I fear and worry for my children if they're going to be going through the same experience of what I went through in education.
Yeah, and I think that is the fear, that each year we seem to get a little bit further away from what the real world will look like for them when they re-enter it.
Yeah. Are we preparing them for exams, or are we preparing them for life?
Yeah.
Not just employment,
what is,
life.
What is the real world? What does the real world, the real world in this country might be very different than another country, and the real world in the north of England is very different than the south of England. The real world in inner city is very different than suburban. So, like, yeah, I'm with you on that. So, hey, this has been quite deep and philosophical and political. I thought we were going to be talking about like cool features in Canva, like which is also true.
So did Matt. So did Matt. Paul, did you? We did give him a theme.
We can do another session on that.
No. But I think one of the things that we did want to talk about is design thinking and the demystifying that from an education perspective. So I wonder if you could talk at that as we see towards the end of this podcast.
Yeah, and we touched on it a little bit earlier about shifting that understanding of where design sits away from marketing communications teams and art departments into something that actually is part and place within every single lesson. And Canva very much describes itself as a visual communication tool, and it's something that aids any form of communication and supports along the way with that. And we know, particularly in the modern world where children are getting a lot of their information via YouTube, via TikTok, it's very, very high production, graphical information that they're receiving, that being able to even just give teachers a touch of that very easily is something that we know can help them better engage their students. And I think helping people understand that design, anytime you're sharing information or anytime you're telling a story, you are going to benefit from high quality design to support you doing that. It's not just something that you learn in the graphics room.
Yeah, very much so. It absolutely isn't. It's design is across that, and I think one of the things that it ties into is that creativity across every subject, every opportunity in design. There's an opportunity in that space, and interestingly, there was a piece of news, and I wonder if Canva are involved in this. Not involved in it, but like there was a big notice, weren't there, that Microsoft Publisher is about to be discontinued, right? So I think about it's very soon, isn't it? Yeah. So my experience in design as a teacher, I used to make all my posters and activities in Microsoft Publisher, and then I look back and I think, oh, that curved word art, oh, that was bad. We are shadow, and we look back now and we think, blooming heck, that were. At that point, we thought it were cutting edge, and now we look at brilliance that you can, and the easy use to make things look really. And thankfully, the best thing about Canva for me. Not that I use these, obviously, because I don't want anybody to think that, is the template. The fact that there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of templates in there for people to drag and drop and customize and make their own. So I think that's the bit, isn't it? So you can go away from Publisher, can go away. That's absolutely fine, because Canva is now here to take the trophy. I don't know if that's the right. Take the crown.
Yeah, someone told me today about Publisher, which is sad, because I'm gonna say I used to use it all the time. Same with, do you know what, I used to actually use Microsoft Paint, so I should apologize to anyone that ever received anything from me that was designed on Paint. But yeah, it's those templates that make it so much easier, because there are loads of templates, and again, and for anyone listening that is in education, Canva for Education, if you're just on the free product, get over to the education product, because there's education specific templates for every single subject, for every single year group. So you've got on there already pre-made courses, pre-made templates and things that you can utilize already and put your own twist on.
Absolutely brilliant. Matt, you definitely don't know about these. You might do if you've listened to the podcast this season, but we now ask three quick fire questions at the end of any podcast. Quick fire, the guest that we've had on recently that hasn't been announced is the quickest we've had so far. So okay. We're going to keep them quick. I'll start, Ben will come in, and then I'll finish. Okay. Future of exams, online, traditional, scrapped.
Online initially, then scrapped.
Okay. Key skill for students in 2040.
I'm going to copy John Neal, actually. Communication and storytelling. I think being able to pass your message across and deliver what you're trying to say eloquently is a key skill.
I've been listening, Ben. We've got a listener. We've got a listener. It's spiked. Last one. Your vision of the future in 2050. Your vision of the future in 50 years.
In 50 years from now. Oh, no, that one isn't going to be that quick an answer. I'm going to say hoverboards, flying cars, and for education, I would like to think it'll be flexible, hybrid, and more mirrored to the working world.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, love it. That'd be a nice little snippet for a TikTok, that, won't it? Or I'll tell you what we could do is we could take this video into Canva and turn it into a little snippet in there, couldn't we? See?
There we go.
Let's do it. Well, Matt, really appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Great to hear the journey. 10 years. Be interested to see where Canva and the world is in 10 years. Never mind 50 years and education. It's going to be better because of it, I believe so. So thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me, guys.